Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can get detailed information about a stock by simply touching its symbol on the crawling stock ticker? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
John Riding here with RDQ Economics as we sift through monetary and fiscal economics. Just, I guess, the question of the moment, where are we on the Riding QE3 meter?
I still think QE3 is pretty unlikely and very inadvisable. I really think we've reached the limits of what U.S. monetary policy can do. And I think that a number of members of the committees feel that as well, even though we're going through these slowdown anxieties with the last couple of jobs reports. I'm far from convinced that it represents any significant sustained slowdown in the economy. And that piling on at this point would represent a potential inflationary threat down the road.
How's the American consumer doing? I get many mixed reports.
Well, I think if you look at the employment numbers, the American consumer is doing better than they were a year ago. And we're seeing a steady rise in hours worked and employment over the last year for all the anxiety about the economy has been running at about 150,000 plus jobs a month. So the consumer is getting better, not getting better fast enough, certainly not getting better at the pace that have gotten better from past recessions. But that's the new reality of recoveries. And, I don't see how, going back to the Fed, how the Fed buying another $500 billion of long-term government bonds or mortgages is going to change that reality for the consumer.
Okay, so it's not going to be like last year when things looked pretty good earlier in the year and just kind of stalled out?
Well, the U.S. faced two huge shocks. The aftershock of the big shock that Japan had with the earthquake and the tsunami and then all the nuclear problems, which gave us a big supply chain disruption. And they also faced the commodity price surge shock, which I think was a direct consequence of QE2. And that squeezed real incomes of consumers. So if we look where we are right now, the big thing that I'm concerned about, you know, some people call it the fiscal cliff. I prefer to think of it as the it's more the tax wall that we face in January 1 of next year if Congress and whoever's president after the November elections don't get their act together and extend the tax. Well, of course, it will be President Obama in that session, regardless of whether he or Governor Romney win the election. But if we don't come together, we're facing that big tax increase. But that's a 2013 issue, and I really don't think it's an issue that's weighing on the economy now. The other big thing is Europe, and I just don't think that the U.S. has enough direct exposure to the problems in Europe, either the financial problems in the banking system or direct exposure of exports to U.S. GDP growth for the recession in Europe to have a major spillover impact.
What's your
on
GDP
the economy.
Call? I'm going to go here. What's your GDP call?
We're still holding for something around 3% this year. You know, we got off to a soft start, but one of the big issues we've raised is we think GDP is portrayed a fairly inaccurate picture of the economy, and there's been big gaps even in between two measures of GDP, between the income measure, which has been much stronger in the recovery than the expenditure measure.
John, let me ask you the question that Marty Fridson and Abby Joseph Cohen decided to disagree on. When the Fed goes to a path to neutrality or to a restrictive policy, can they do it smoothly, and can we all adjust our portfolios before they do damage?
I think a more telling question is, can they do it before either you or I retire? I mean, that is so far away for the Fed getting back to anything approaching neutral or restrictive when they're still committed to keeping rates on hold through late 2014, which is something, by the way, I don't think they'll be able to stay on hold for that long for. So if you think of that and then the pace of gradual tightening, they're not going to get there till late 2016, 2017 at the earliest. It's 4 or 5 years away. So in the meantime, do they do damage by keeping rates here? And I would say if we look back to 2003, 2004, and when they kept rates at 1%, well into the recovery and then started raising rates slowly, they created the financial conditions that gave us the structured credit bubble. and the housing bubble that eventually burst and did the damage that we did now. So, yes, I do believe that when this gets unwound, there is going to be damage and significant damage somewhere.
Well, John, why do you think they won't stay on hold that long?
I think for two reasons. I think, firstly, the economy will outperform their expectations. And in one dimension, as miserable as GDP growth has been, one of the two things that the Fed has to focus on in terms of its dual mandate, the unemployment rate, has persistently declined. So we're now down at 8.1%, way too high, falling for the wrong reasons because labor force participation is declining. But that has been such a persistent trend, and in defiance of all our forecasts, that I think it's likely to continue. And secondly, I don't think inflation is going to remain below their 2% mandate. Now, right now, it's slightly above and will probably dip below on the decline in energy prices and gasoline prices that we've seen. But I think that will be temporary. So ultimately, their path to renormalization will begin. And we saw before late 2014, and we saw some hint of that in the two people who were out thinking rates should be on hold till 2016 at the last meeting, moving those expectations in a year to 2015.
The negative real rates that we are enjoying, and particularly negative real rates far out the curve, how do they distort our economy?
Well, I think they distort the economy by making people make bad decisions. Now, it's always a problem knowing what those bad decisions are. In the last expansion, when we had negative real rates, it was bad decisions in terms of overbuilding and overpurchasing houses, and we're still working through that hangover. But it distorts the allocation of capital, and that has long-term negative consequences on the economy. And it's interesting you use the word enjoy, and it's a lot of people aren't enjoying these rates. Savers aren't enjoying them. Retirees aren't enjoying these rates. In fact, I think one could argue that if rates were somewhat higher, the rate of return to savers who might have a relatively high propensity to consume might actually be beneficial to the economy. If you are retiring and you are looking at long-term risk-free rates, 10-year rates below 2%, where are you going to put your money to generate a yield that you can actually spend in your retirement? And I think that these rates are very distortionary and are very damaging for savers.
Well, also, John, you know, we're looking at the lowest mortgage rates in human memory, basically, but that doesn't mean you can get a loan.
Absolutely. And in two ways, one of which is being able to qualify for that loan. And then the other is that just as we saw in articles yesterday, the length of time it takes, even if you do qualify, to be able to get the lender's attention because they're simply swamped now with all the extra stuff that they have to do to make sure they don't go through all the problems with robo-signings and so on should that loan go bad. So now it seems to me that the processing time of mortgages has extended out significantly as well. So I don't think that it's the low level of mortgage rates that's holding back the housing economy. We saw some hints of stabilization in prices around the country, and I think that's coming from the better employment picture, that people have the income to qualify for the loan, the income to service the loan, rather than getting that rate down.
I want to revisit your 3% GDP call, something in that vicinity. I don't mean to pin you to 3.0%. What is it, the feature we should look for to know that the gloom crew has it wrong?
Well, for the gloom crew themselves to know that they have it wrong, they have to see a stronger consumer picture because the demand side forecasters of GDP, consumer spending is pivotal to that story. I think, though, what we need to look for is continued high levels of profits. It's really the profit story that has been the V-shaped recovery in this recovery. Profits are very high now as a share of GDP. And it's those profits and the incentive to earn more profits down the road that is driving the economy. But I think the real picture the real thing we have to focus on is the job story. And if we see the firming of the job story to the 200,000 plus jobs again, and I think we will see that, that'll be the telling factor. Right now, the slowdown in jobs has thrown that uncertainty. But it's a slowdown in jobs. Job creation the first 4 months of the year is still averaged slightly better than 200,000.
John Roding, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.